Now, from the WOR Broadcast Center, at the foot of the New World Trade Center, rising out of the ashes.
And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free.
A testament to the strength and glory of America. Here's John Gambling.
All right, Bill Rock, thank you very much. Yes, Friday before the 10th anniversary of 9/11, and it is a Friday. That means Mayor Michael Bloomberg is here. Good morning, Mr. Mayor.
You'll notice that we didn't quite beat the record of 40 days and 40 nights on rain, but we came close.
You got close, yeah.
I mean, if you go upstate,
the total amounts might have been about the same.
You go just north and even to Westchester, and
in
it's
New
still
Jersey.
New Jersey and up into Vermont. And there are places that won't get roads for the next 3 months. You can't build them that fast. They can't even get construction stuff in. And this week was probably worse in terms of total rainfall than the hurricane.
Absolutely.
Hurricane
yeah.
came so quickly that it washed out a lot of stuff, but you still have an enormous problem. And we were very lucky here in the city. But and out in the eastern end of Long Island, people thought, that's be blown. But it turned out most of the damage was in New Jersey and then upstate New York and over up into Vermont. You keep watching every new tropical depression.
You got another one coming up. What, Maria?
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of them. They form every few days. There's one going into the Gulf, one going way out to sea. One that could hit the east coast of the United States, and who knows when. But I don't know about global warming, but the weather's been awful strange. You've had this enormous drought across the whole southern part of our country. You've had rains in places they never had rains, and droughts where they never had droughts. And
how about those horrible Texas wildfires? 1,400
homes?
That's
because of the droughts.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's just a drought. I always say that people, they don't believe in global warming and climate change. Let's assume for a second that you could be right. You really want to run the risk of finding out that you were wrong? I mean, you just can't do that. And we should. And there's real progress being made. I saw the other day. Virginia, three coal-fired plants that announced they were going to close last week, one of which was the coal plant that I did an event outside with the Sierra Club on a ship. And I thought that was very responsible for that company. I've got a note to call the president and say, I'm not opposed to energy. Anybody, I'm in favor of development, but with natural gas makes a lot more sense than coal. We have six coal-fired plants in New York. People talk about Indian Point. Nobody's died yet, and hopefully never will, from nuclear in this country. But I think the numbers are something like 13,000 people a year die from the pollutants that coal-fired plants put into the air. The estimate is 13,000 extra people from coal and about 800 of them in the New York area.
Why can't you take a coal plant and make it a natural gas plant?
You can, and in fact, that's what they do in the Sierra Club, which I've given some money to help do, is when these plants come up for renewal, their licenses, which happens periodically, the new requirements are so strict that it's probably cheaper just to bite the bullet. And natural gas is something we have, and it's plentiful and less expensive, and the economics probably do make sense to run the natural gas. People say, the jobs in the coal industry. Truth of the matter is there's lots of jobs in the natural gas industry, and coal today is so automated that there really aren't that many coal miners left. I'm sympathetic, they've got to get jobs, but we're killing each other. And it's the air you breathe and the air your kids breathe and your grandkids. You don't have grandkids yet.
No, I do not. No.
Neither do I.
To the great disappointment of my wife.
I got that lecture yesterday from some woman I was sitting next to. She said, it was the greatest thing that ever happened to her. And I said, look, my oldest daughter asked me what I thought about it. I said, Emma, it's up to you. Love to see it. Or
I've had a lot
whatever
to do in your life,
have.
But that one I had not
absolutely.
Nothing to do with. Let's see here. The terror threat that we are hearing about this morning. Very serious?
Credible, but not corroborated, which means one source. Corroboration means you get multiple sources, which increases the likelihood that it's real. Credible means that it's possible to do. If somebody says, I'm going to do something that's so outlandish that never going to get the resources or couldn't possibly do it, but something that is possible. Not at liberty to talk about the details of it. But keep in mind, we have threats all the time. on the internet every day. There are threats of people, particularly around big sporting events, on religious holidays, and around commemorations of things like 9/11. And each time, the NYPD, with the FBI, we increase our security, which obviously we had done for this. Are we increasing a little more? Yeah, we're increasing a little more, but there's a limit to how much you can have, and to just because you can't have a cop in every corner. But it's also true, remember, that a lot of the precautions we take, you don't see. Undercover people and cameras and radiation detectors and, you know, using technology and undercover people, you see the uniform cop on the street.
Which is intentional, obviously.
Yes. I mean, you want people to see right. that there's security there. And that might scare them away. You also want people that they don't see so that if they're going to do something, you can catch them. And they don't wait till the cop goes around the corner. And it's serious, but I think the right answer is go about your business. I took the subway down this morning like I do most days, but I made a point of saying I was going to do it, and there are lots of cameras on the subway car and that sort of thing. Why? You know, I talked to Jay Walder, who runs the MTA. He's increased security on the bridges and tunnels that the MTA runs. NYPD provides the security in the subways. We have more random bag searches than we normally would do. Do you catch anything? Probably not. It's somebody who's going to carry a bomb on, and they see a bag search, they go out. But it's, in the end, I've always thought we mislabel what police and fire do. They are the first preventers. And if they really do their job, we'll never have to use them as first responders, which would be wonderful. So the fire department, when they come and inspect your building and say, look, you don't need a smoke detector, and you know you should sprinkle here, and the building code says you got to do this and have more exits, that's the best thing they do. God forbid there's a fire. They show up, they put their lives at risk, and they put it out. But the part that really makes a difference is, and the same thing with police in terms of prevention. People don't do things because they see cops. They don't do things because the cops work with the kids. They don't do things because, and we're all in this together. You can't leave security to a handful of young men and women overseas who are fighting and giving their lives. We are part of it as well. We're part of it in terms of, if you see something, say something. There's a lot more civilians out there than there are law enforcement officials, and everybody's, you know, got a chance to see. Also, we've got to make sure that we don't let the terrorist take away our rights without any terrorism. If you lock yourself in your house because you're scared, they're winning. If you don't let somebody else pray or say what they want to say, or you deny rights to certain people, you know, that's exactly what they want. And I don't think we should do that. I said this morning on television that, you know, the question is, how safe are we? I always say to Ray Kelly, would you let your two sons work in that building? And if you will, then I'll let my two daughters work in that building. But that's a real gutsy, you know, let's get cut to the chase kind of measure. We've stopped an awful lot of terrorist 13 events, we say, but there could be hundreds more that people looked and said, uh-oh, I don't want to go there. They got too many people watching, too much technology. Let's take my terrorism elsewhere or not do it. But you see events taking place in the Western world and the rest of the world. Almost every day there's people killed, car bombs and suicide bombers and shootings.
No, it's a scourge. It's a worldwide scourge.
Well, also keep in mind, our police department has the job of reducing street crime, and there's so many guns in the street. You saw the shootings
last weekend. We want to get into that.
Yeah. And our fire department has the job of going out and putting out the fires that do exist. There's no easy answers here. But if you ask me, everything will go on this weekend. I'm going to go to the tennis match tomorrow night. I will do all these events. I feel comfortable walking the streets. I take the subway. And I think everybody should feel just as comfortable. New Yorkers are sophisticated. They understand we live in a diverse society, and we are the symbol of democracy from around the world. And for 10 years or more, actually more, but let's just talk about the last 10 years, New Yorkers knew that this is the place that a terrorist would want to attack. And what's happened? New York is back bigger than ever. We have downtown here where we are right now. We used to have 7 hotels. Today we have 26 hotels. We used to have a couple parks. We have more parks than you can shake. I can even
packed.
Packed. It used to hollow out at 6 o'clock at night. Now there's baby strollers and supermarkets and Bed Bath & Beyond and everything and all over the streets. It's become a very hot place to live. We have more businesses down here than we did before 9/11. And the good news is it's very diverse. It's not just finance. Because you don't want one industry, because when that goes in through a cycle, a down cycle, it hurts everybody. If they have diversity, there's less hurt. So, you know, the message is, you know, over the 10 years, New York is back and the terrorists haven't won. Still in New York, you can do what all of those things that the Bill of Rights gives you the right to do here, and you don't have to look over your shoulder, and the cops are our friends, and... Yeah, it's very different maybe than some other places, but we have every reason to be proud.
All right, we'll talk about the 9/11 ceremonies when we come right back, 19 minutes after 8 o'clock. Let me remind you that if you've got a question for the mayor, we'll have some time at the end, 800-321-0710. Talk to Mike Figliola, see if you can get your name up on the board. 800-321-0710, coming right back.
John Gambling and Mayor Mike on News Talk Radio 710, WOR.
I remember when Rock was young. Me and Susie had so much fun, holding hands and skimming stones. Had a look of Chevy and
the great Elton John, and it's Elton John Bumper Music Friday here on the John Gambling Show.
I'm surprised you know who Elton John is.
Oh, please, why do you say that?
Well, you know, it's a little more with it than picture,
stop it.
You know.
Come on. You're throwing me under the bus. All right, I guess maybe I deserve it.
I've known Elton John for a long time and his companion. Great music. The guy's brilliant, absolutely brilliant.
Somebody was telling me the other day they were at an Elton John concert this past weekend, and he did 2.5 hours straight.
He does that, and Paul McCartney does that. I've been to 2 concerts, one at Shea, one at Yankee Stadium, this year, and 40-odd songs. Paul McCartney never left the stage. Most of these things, they bring in other acts, and they go
they
and
take
they
a
change
break.
And
right.
take a break, and that's why McCartney played either the guitar or the banjo, I think, piano. Every single song, sang every single song.
Amazing. I don't have that kind of stamina. I won't speak for you. 26 minutes after 8 o'clock, Sunday, of course, the 10th anniversary of 9/11. A lot is going on here. I've been watching not only the construction, but the containment, I guess, around the World Trade Center. There are police barricades everywhere. Are you anticipating, are the police anticipating a huge crowd?
Well, what we've said is because there's a limited amount of space where the ceremony is taking place,
I'm talking
and we
about
can
periphery.
Only have a certain number of people on the plaza at a given time because of building codes and because there's construction on 3 sides, so you can't get out easily. And so we've said this Sunday is for families. Now, there are people who are not happy. I was a first responder, and, you know, I deserve, and I, you know, this, I gave money, whatever. You just can't have everybody, and you got to make a decision. And I think reserving the first day for the families, let them go on without people pushing them and shoving them, and see the names of their loved ones and hear the names read. And we're going to read the names of those who died back in 1993. Remember, a bunch died in the basement of the World Trade Center, and we learned nothing from that, sadly. What the people that died on 9/11 here in New York, also in Pennsylvania, also in Arlington, Virginia at the Pentagon, and all of those names are also around but the 2 pools. And then day 2, everybody else can come on. We've put in a ticketing system because we just don't know how big the crowds are going to be, and it figures that it'd be much more concentrated at the beginning. excuse me, you can get your tickets, you know, go on nyc.gov or whatever.
I hear they got rid of 25,000 tickets in like an hour.
I think we've 300,000 so far. Yeah. You know, and you give them to tour bus operators who want, because they want to bring people. And if people can't get on, they're not going to take the tour bus. And we want tourists to be able to come and see and reflect and learn a lesson and understand what happened there. And an enormous amount of planning has gone into what we call day 2. Probably as much and for day two as for day one. Day one is much simpler, and we have eight speakers. There's nothing political about it. It is about who was there at the time. So President Bush, Governor DeFrancesco from New Jersey, Governor Pataki from New York, and Mayor Giuliani. Those were the four elected officials that were directly involved on 9/11/01. And there are plenty of others. I mean, you start opening this up, you know, all of the senators and congressmen, everybody that helped and really were instrumental in getting us going, but just can't have everybody. So that's a ways to limit it. And then the same collection of offices, but who is in office now? So President Obama, Governor Christie, Governor Cuomo, and the mayor of New York. And each one is going to read a short, I think 20 seconds, 30 seconds, totally non-political piece about democracy or freedom, things that are appropriate. We've given everybody two or three. And, you know, we've done this 10 times now, once the six-month anniversary and then nine annual anniversaries. And I think everybody, the consensus after everyone is this is the right thing to do. You don't want political speeches. You don't want one elected official grandstanding versus another. It is very solemn, and between those speeches, we read the names of everybody, and you got to remember when you're down there, it's for the families, and if you want to go and do something else, you can do something else offsite, and there are lots of things. I went to a very moving police department ceremony yesterday. There's one tomorrow, Saturday, for the fire department. The memorial service here at the World Trade Center site is finished on Sunday morning. There's one at St. Peter's, a church around the corner that the Port Authority sponsors. They've done that every year. It's a beautiful old church that's been redone. And then in the evening, Staten Island has a service. Staten Island, there was a bigger percentage of our first responders that died that came from Staten Island than any place else. It's sort of the bedroom community for our municipal workforce. And they raised private money, had a Japanese architect, I think lives in Staten Island, nice young guy, built a spectacular memorial. It's small. It's like wings, although I think he says postcards, looking out at the site from Staten Island. And they read the names of those people, and then they have local singers and violin players and dancers. It's Staten Island's a bedroom community, and it really is a participatory thing.
I have to say, I was at the 9/11 dinner the other night, fundraising dinner. Yep. that you hosted, and one of the things that was part of the program was a live shot of the memorial and the waterfalls all lit, and I have to tell you, it was spectacular.
I'm there all the time. Not really as mayor, but as chairman of the foundation that's doing it. And I took the crew of the Atlantis. They were in town.
The last shuttle flight,
four or five of them. And so a couple of people from NASA. And they did something in Queens at the Science Museum. And I said, what are you doing? Well, we don't have any plans. I said, well, come on, let's all have dinner, my girlfriend and me. And we went. And then I said, big surprise, we did it in Tribeca. So we went over. And at night, it is even more impressive. And what I thought about was the water is gorgeous in the day and at night with the lights on it. But the names are cut through the steel. They are heated in the winter and cooled in the summer, and they're cut all the way through, so the light shines through the names coming up at you. It really is quite spectacular.
And they have added, the construction people have added, the World Trade Center 1, the Freedom Tower, is now lit in three different, red, white, and blue.
Is it really?
Yeah, with the interior lights. It's brand new this morning. They just turned it on this morning.
I didn't see that. Yeah. That's going up. I mean, the bottom line is we have to build for the future so we have an economy. People say, you shouldn't be thinking about an economy in the same breath as you're thinking about remembering. But the people that died left behind spouses and parents and children, they have to have a future. And the people that died in the World Trade Center, were they working to take care of these people? They aren't here to take care of their relatives anymore. So we've got to do it. And you only do it by good schools and jobs and all that sort of stuff. So it really ties together.
Lots to talk about. I've run a little long here in the half hour, but I want to ask you real fast about the those that have criticized because religion, clergy, not part of this.
It's a civil ceremony. there is plenty of opportunity for people to have their religious ceremonies, where some people don't want to go to a religious ceremony for with another religion. And the number of different religions in this city are really quite amazing. The number of people, of all the people that died, probably represented every single religion. It isn't that you can't pick and choose. You shouldn't pick and choose. Government, if you want to have a service for your religion, you can have it in your church or in a field or whatever. And incidentally, almost every religion is having something. Even the New York Mets are having a thing on Saturday.
Well, for some, that's a religion.
Sure. I mean, so it's the right decision because somebody said, it's my religion. Yes, but what if you, it's, remember, terrorism is the wants to take away your right to practice yours, and if not yours, they want to take mine. But they don't like the fact that you have one religion, I have another. They don't. They believe that they know what's right, and it may be right for them, but government shouldn't be forcing it down people's throats. And we've never had any religious participation in any of the previous 10. And I think it's the right policy. Hopefully it'll be continued long after you and I are gone.
All right, Mayor Michael Bloomberg, if you've got a question, we've got some names up on the board here, but a couple open slots, 800-321-0710. Questions for Mayor Michael Bloomberg, 800-321-0710. All right, I've got Bobita Hariani a little late, but better late than never. Bobita.
John Gambling and Mayor Mike, News Talk Radio 710 WOR.
Sad songs say so much. Elton John, Bumper Music Friday, here on the John Gambling Show with Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Last weekend, nobody knows better than you, horrible with all the gun violence that took place, the death of Denise Gay.
Some things are related to each other. Labor Day weekend always has an enormous number of shootings, probably built around too much drinking. Too much partying. There's a big parade that gets people to come, although, in all fairness, the violence at that parade is down by an order of magnitude. It's much, much less. But still, we confiscated an AK-47 on the sidelines of the parade.
That's a fun thing to take to a parade.
I'm Second Amendment's fine, but you just shouldn't have assault weapons in.
And we had that crazy out in
Carson City. He used an AK-47 as well.
Exactly.
Yeah, and then Congress refuses to renew the assault rifle ban. And the courts have said they have a right to do it. It's not unconstitutional.
What did Ray Kelly tell you about? I mean, just the numbers.
Well, it's very worrisome. You can't have more police on the streets. I mean, you can't have a cop standing next to every single person. And there's just too many guns in the hands of young people who don't have jobs, maybe, or don't have other things to do and don't value human life. And, today shootings are down from last year. Murder is down from last year, only slightly up from the year before, which was the record year, but way down from where it was. And other kinds of crime are basically down. But any crime is too much crime. And, we have to have techniques that keep changing to try to stop things, and we've made a lot of progress. The city is much safer than it used to be. I say this, somebody could walk in any neighborhood, man or woman, in our city during the day and not have to look over their shoulder. Now, that's not true anyplace else. And a couple of places at night that I would not suggest you do it. There's always some crime. But it compared to other cities, every neighborhood is safe.
Yeah, but when somebody's sitting on their front step and, gets taken out,
the bullets flying around. But, that was tragic the other day. But that happens with monotonous regularity in the city. Young kids, the week before, there were a couple kids shot. Sometimes you get lucky, the bullet just grazes or goes through. And then you've got the cops who we send them in to stop the stuff, and people start shooting at them, and they've got to shoot back, and once bullets start flying and ricocheting, you know, it's very not a place
you want to be. In one of the papers about the parade and the sale of alcohol, illegal alcohol on the streets, any indication that that was involved
here? I talked to Yolanda Lazuma Clark, who runs the parade, a smart woman and really nice. You know, she's upset. People blame the parade for everything. I think that's not fair. On the other hand, it is a time when the Caribbean celebrate lots of ethnicity, pride, ethnic pride. And, you know, there's a lot of parties that week. And when you have a lot of parties, there's a lot of drinking. And then there's a lot of, but as she pointed out to me, there's one place where eight people got shot. That was up in the Bronx. Mm-hmm. The parade was in Brooklyn. So, you know, you can't tie everything. Everybody's a little bit guilty, a little bit innocent. And we just got to, it's a thing, a crime. We've got to stop this and get the guns off the street for everybody's sake. Not, let's not look for people to blame. Let's look for solutions. And I've reached out, incidentally, to a whole bunch of community organizers and activists and ministers and whatever to try to get some ideas. And we have this young men's initiative that George Soros was so generous with. And, you know, we're trying to make it better. Will you ever get to zero crime? Probably not.
Don't have to go into it in great detail, but again, stonewalling completely in Washington over, you know, some of those gun loopholes.
You know, it's the NRA. They threaten we're going to keep you from getting reelected. That's what elected officials generally care about rather than doing what's right. You cannot argue that they vote to keep AK-47s on the street and have you, let you buy armor-piercing bullets. That has nothing to do with sport or Second Amendment. You can't. How do you explain those votes? How do you explain that they vote against better schools? How do you explain they vote for fiscal policies that will bankrupt us? The only explanation is that whoever is on the side that they are favoring, they believe, has more to do with their reelection. And they do it by raising money and working in campaigns and phone banks and that sort of stuff. And the only way you stop that is the average person in the street's got to start calling their senator, congressman, assemblyperson, whatever, and say, I'm not going to take this anymore. I'm telling you, I'm going to hold you responsible at the ballot box, even if your opponent is somebody I disagree with more. And that's what the NRA does. They say, you know, John Gambling says, oh, my opponent's worse on guns. And they say, John, we don't care. We're going after you. And that just focuses it. And the small group of people has an enormous impact in Congress. There's nobody, and it's not just Congress. Both ends of Pennsylvania Avenue, I've said this before, both sides of the aisle, it's not a Republican or a Democratic thing. And there are other pressure groups like that that have a disproportionate amount of impact, and if we're going to have a civil society and jobs and freedoms, we've got to do something about this.
All right, a couple of things now that we're down into Washington briefly. President's speech last night on jobs and the economy, and the comments of Ben Bernanke yesterday.
I didn't see either speech. I gave a speech at the Jewish Museum and South Street, Earth, Wind, and Fire, which J&R sponsored downtown.
That's fun.
These guys were great.
That's more fun than listening to Ben Bernanke.
I tried to get them to move to New York from L.A., but that's an old group. But they've been in business 40 years. I remember them many years ago. Bernanke's trying to do something with monetary policy because we are not making progress with fiscal policy, but it really is a fiscal issue rather than a monetary issue. The president has come up with a list of proposals, some of which are things the Republicans, in all fairness, have been saying they want to cut taxes. He says, okay.
Right. Payroll taxes.
Let's do it. They say you got to pay for everything. Okay. How are we going to pay for it? Let's cut some stuff. But I think it was a serious proposal. Nobody even, I'm sure the president doesn't think anybody's going to automatically take what he said and pass it, but it's a good starting point. And now the president and both sides, because the Democrats aren't on his side any more than Republicans are on his side in Congress, they've got to all get together and do something for this country right now. And I think, you know, the president should, I keep saying this, no matter what your political beliefs are, no matter whether you want to have President Obama get a second term or not, you can't stop progress and saving this country for political reasons. The lesson of 9/11, in many senses, was look what we can do if we get rid of partisanship. We brought New York back, and there's really not much partisan politics in New York. It's much more nonpartisan, and not perfect, but more. And he's made a serious proposal. Okay, let's get every. And he's pointed out how imperative this is for the country to do something. We have to reduce the deficit. That's right, because eventually it'll bankrupt us. But we also cannot have this number of people unemployed for this long without having serious consequences for them, but also for the rest of society. You just can't, governments don't, the public won't tolerate it, and rightly so. We have people who maybe they don't have the right education, right skills or whatever. We got to, that's a given. Now let's go find a solution to the problem rather than blaming somebody. And too much, I think, in Washington, we look, who's to blame for the mortgage crisis? Well, I happen to think it was Freddie and Fannie and Congress, as well as the banks, as well as every pension fund, union, individual saver. We all wanted this expansion that got carried away and then collapsed. But regardless, if you want to take, we got to focus on going forward. And incidentally, if you start talking about putting in jail those who made all these loans, and then you sit there and say, but why aren't banks making loans? What are you, crazy? Of course they're not going to make loans. They get worried about all of that craziness. We've got to look to the future and say, okay, now we want responsible lending, but we want people to take risks. That's what lending and borrowing is all about. And that's what expansion is all about. And the crises we have today is very different than the crisis we had back in 07, 08. In 07, 08, it was taking too much risk. Our crisis right now is not being willing to take enough risk. And one comes out of the other, but the approaches have to be very different. We should have cut back. We should have had more regulation. We should have stopped some of the abusive practices and calmed things down. And in fact, in New York City, we put away $6 billion because we didn't think in New York City it could continue. That's the good news. The bad news is we've just used up four of that $6 billion for this year because now we're on the other side of the cycle. I wish we had put away more than $6 billion because we've got for the next couple of years and probably after that, enormous deficits in the city, and we've got to figure out a ways to get through that. But we only have a couple billion dollars towards fixing that problem, and the deficits are $5 billion a year. Some of the stuff, if Congress passes it, money for education, that's great, money for infrastructure, cutting payroll taxes, encouraging small businesses, they're all good programs, and incidentally, they're all programs that the Republicans and the Democrats have both talked about. The problem, I think, in Washington more than anything is we've become so partisan. It's the extremes that are governing, really. And democracy doesn't work if you have extremes. Democracy is about most people coming to the center, getting some of what they want, and not getting everything, so the other guy gets something. And that's what then democracy works fine. And we used to have that more, at least that's conventional wisdom. I'm not sure the good old days were the good old days, but we certainly don't have it now. And the president, the answer, both Bernanke and the president, they're trying. Okay. And they pointed out, you got to do something now. So let's all get together and go on.
All right. Well, what we're going to do right now is when we come back from our break, we're going to go to the full bank phones that we've got right here and a little bit more. 8 minutes before 9 o'clock. Coming right back.
Mayor Michael Bloomberg on the John Gambling Show. News Talk Radio 710 WOR.
All right. You've got that right, Mr. Mayor. We got folks on the phone. It's going to start with Tony. Good morning, Tony.
Good morning, sir. Mr. Mayor,
yep.
I'm a longtime member of the NRA, and I think you're blaming the wrong people. It's the people, not the guns, that do the killing.
Well, Tony, I think that's right, but keep in mind the NRA has tried to, and in fact has been successful in keeping Congress to end the gun show loophole. Congress passed laws saying you got to have a background checked, but there's this loophole for gun shows, and they have worked very hard to keep Congress from fixing that. We used to have a ban on assault weapons, and I think it's fair to say the NRA had fought that and it did not get redone. People wanted to ban 30 bullet clips for pistols, which is, I don't know, if it takes you 30 bullets to kill a deer, that's hardly sport. I don't have another like that. You know, so you're right. In the end, it takes a human being to get the gun and to pull the trigger, but if you had fewer guns, it would be a lot less of a problem. And if you go to other Western countries, they don't have anything like the number of guns we have, and they don't have anything like the murderers we have. And there's nothing wrong with the NRA as an organization to represent people who have a common interest in firearms, and nothing wrong with firearms. But the federal government, in its wisdom, and I think they're right, passed laws saying kids shouldn't be allowed to have guns, people with criminal records shouldn't be allowed to have guns, people who have psychiatric problems shouldn't be allowed to have guns. And yet, if we put you on a no-fly list, you can still go buy a gun. Or if you go to a gun show, you can buy a gun without any background check. And that's where, you know, we part company. I think that the NRA is behind that. I don't think they even deny that they're behind it. They do an awful lot of lobbying.
All right, let's go to Dan in Brooklyn. Dan, what's your question for the mayor?
I think you're doing a fantastic job. And the question is, you know, the movies that happen in Brooklyn, we're lucky with the area that we're living in as far as Brooklyn, but what happens is there's no parking. What happens is three blocks of parking get taken up.
Yep.
And then you come home from work and there's no parking at all.
You're 100% right, Aloha, and if you can come up with a solution to this problem, I'd be happy to try to implement it.
Other than not having them film.
Right. I mean, the trouble is that the film industry supports something like 100,000 jobs and 4,000 local businesses, and the money's spent not on the big actors and actresses. It's spent on lumber yards and costume houses and food suppliers and hardware stores and transportation companies and hotels and office supply and furniture rental places. This is an industry that generates $5 billion in economic activity, and we've really taken a big part of the business from Hollywood and from Canada and from Eastern Europe. Last year, 200 films were shot on location in this city, and right now there's 23 television series being filmed in New York City right now. I went to visit one. It's an Australian series being shown only in Australia, being filmed in New York. I went to see another one. It's a story that takes place in Chicago. You touch a button and the background is all Chicago, but it's being done in New York.
That's,
and Brooklyn's got a lot of it. But Dan's right. When they move in to make a film, you know, they take away a lot of parking. But one of the things we have done is we've tried to get them to do it, spread it around the city and around Brooklyn, around every city, just so that the same neighborhood doesn't get penalized every time. Dan, if you can come up with a solution, give it to us.
Yeah, call 311.
Right.
Go to newyorkcity.gov. All right, sir, thank you very much. Have a busy weekend ahead.
See you next week.
All right, Mayor Michael Bloomberg here on the John Gambling Show. Speaking of busy, one more hour, but full of interesting people that you want to hear. Tom Brokaw from NBC News, and also former Vice President of the United States, Dick Cheney, will be joining me as well. So glad that you are where you are on the other side of the radio. It's 9 o'clock in the morning. We've got more news with Avita Arianna.